Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadmore. With me, as always, is Thomas Brooks.
Oh, hello, hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
We're going to go down a rabbit hole today, aren't we?
We are. It's going to be rather intense, from the benign to the intense.
So we're going to talk about chiropractic. We're also going to talk about Reiki and reflexology today. And if you kind of delve a little bit into the history of their craft, you can kind of understand, like, the people who train in this. A lot of those early thoughts about what their practice does still sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to look at psychologists who are like hardcore Freudians, a little skepticism and ire, but like not a whole lot's changed when you go back to like the beginnings of these movements.
Well, I'll even say, like, my Mim and Cog class and I have a fun time with the different, like, euphemisms people use in, like, current academic research in memory and cognition for the unconscious. Like, it ranges from implicit to unconscious to not explicit to, I think there was one where they actually just called it the shadowy box of things we don't know about.
My personal favorite is the neuroscience non-conscious.
Oh, the non-conscious, yeah.
Though, I guess I'll give them some credit. They do differentiate that as like the like parts of like what keep our body running that are completely outside of, like, you know, we can't take conscious awareness of like kidney functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that exists in the non-conscious. Which is
right,
so afraid.
Yeah.
They're afraid
but
of that,
like,
word.
They won't call it unconscious, but they'll still use the same nothing box that Freud used.
Yeah, because they don't know. Like, you can't. Well, I mean, I guess in neuroscience, you can actually see, like, you know, tune your machine correctly, you'll see activation of some
dead
areas
fish.
Of the brain. Yeah, or, you know, if you mistune it, you see activation in dead fish. But.
I think to start off, for some like light brevity, since all of these things we're going to talk about have to do with posture and pressure points, just brief thoughts on the green line test. And so for the uninitiated, the green line test is a meme that's went around last year primarily.
I missed this.
So it's very fun. So basically you get a picture of a heterosexual couple, usually a famous couple.
Never mind.
And
I know exactly what this is.
You draw where their posture is with a green line. And people started noticing that a lot of times the women in the photos were like completely perpendicular with the ground. And the men were leaning into their woman. Or partner into lean into woman. And so then that started some like metaphysical speculations about like masculinity and body posture, and like, is there some sort of like implicit, I don't know, characteristics about these people who project hyper masculinity, but in reality that they're like, I don't know, needy, or they have some sort of weakness, or they have like some sort of covert, like, this is my masculinity is a show, but really I'm like a small child inside. And so it started getting passed around with speculations about different celebrities about like, ooh, are they really a man, or are they just like a weak virgin with this, like, who's letting this woman like run their lives kind of stuff. So we definitely dipped into the internet manosphere misogyny thematically with this, but I thought it was very funny that it emerged as a like a meme, because in the past, you know, like there's this like cultural messaging around like posture, for on how like men and women should hold themselves, and like men are supposed to be like put your shoulders back and hold your head up tall and like walk with a long gait in order to like project powerfulness. And yeah, just, you know, you're not a real man unless you act like one, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I went and looked it up, and it's mostly just pictures of Will Smith.
That makes sense.
It's a weird little thing. Yeah, no, at first I was like, what is the green line to? And then I'm like, oh, I know exactly what this is. Yeah. Oh man, it's
Oh, here we have a version of the Twin Towers collapsing. The first one's been hit, and so it's leaning, and then the other one's standing up straight. Never forget.
It's terrible. Oh, geez. Yeah, it's that. It's fascinating. I'd like to, like, that gets into like this like realm of like, I almost say like not even trying. It's this like ad hoc or post hoc. You go and search for pictures on the internet. You only find the pictures that kind of confirm. Like, there's a lot of confirmation bias in delving through this. It's just, I don't know, it's just fascinating how like the leaps and bounds that you have to get to be like, well, if you're leaning into your partner, then you're the emasculated one in the relationship. Or it gets into maybe, I don't know, maybe if we have time at some point in a later episode, we'll talk about like the really bizarre, like kind of conspiracy theory level pseudoscience belief of the people who like investigate whether or not these people really are men or women.
Oh yeah,
these
I've seen those. I feel like they've calmed down since Lady Gaga, though. I haven't seen much about that.
You just haven't been looking on the right side of the internet. They're still there. They're just getting.
It sounds
their
like
YouTube
I'm in the
channels.
Right side of the internet.
Yeah, you are on the right side of the internet. No, they're getting their YouTube channels taken down pretty rapidly. So, like a couple of the bigger people in it, they're on like their 100th YouTube channel. They just keep making new ones and putting out videos under new names and under new kind of pseudonyms to kind of keep on with this idea that they have. And it has started to ramp up again with a lot of the like anti-trans rhetoric that's being said now, because there are these people in that on that side of the argument that are like, or that's that movement that are like, I could totally tell that it's a man or a woman, and then like they know, and they're not really that great at figuring it out. Go figure, right?
Before we move on, I do want to note that I found one. The quality of a power couple is when both members are vertical instead of slanted. And the example is Andy Samberg from Saturday Night Live and The Lonely Islands. So like, I'm on a boat.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I know those guys.
His wife, Joanna Newsom, who is like my favorite musician because she's like a weird little forest nymph. But there's like four photos of them together at different events, and they're both vertical in all their photos. And it's like power couple. I'm like, okay.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Don't.
I'm sure they are, but I don't know if their posture is going to tell you that.
Yeah, don't show any affection. Don't lean into your partner. Don't whisper things in their ear, because that's not manly.
Don't lean in.
Yeah.
I don't typically lean in. I just like crouch and crawl around on the floor like a goblin. So leaning is hard for me.
True Sigma mentality.
Yeah. I reject your posture and adopt a golem stance. My precious.
We really have to start making, you know, like shirts or something. Reject masculinity, adopt Gollum stance.
Embrace Smeagol.
Embrace Smeagol. Oh man. You know, I really needed that. I've been reading way too much about reflexology and Reiki and chiropractic over the last couple of days that helped to, you know, bring me into a good space as we're about to talk about.
Huzzah.
So
initial thoughts, I feel like we could probably put Reiki and reflexology in the same category. Like, it's fairly similar. I can't, like, they're both considered pseudosciences, which I think they rightly belong there, but they're not in, like, the, I don't think either of them are particularly harmful, in my opinion, just based off of my reading.
I do want to read, because this is, like, the greatest encapsulation of everything that we're going to talk about at this point. When it comes to, like, some of these bizarre claims that maybe not Reiki, reflexology makes some, I think, a little more than Reiki might, at least from what I found. But this is from a website on what is reflexology. And I'm just going to read this one paragraph real quick, and then you can introduce what these actually are. But there have been lots of reflexology research, but no conclusive scientific evidence presented either anatomically or physiologically to verify that energy lines actually connect the various parts of your body to the soles of your feet.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. However.
Oh, Lord.
There is also no scientific evidence which has disproven these theories. So, first off, they're not theories if they haven't been substantiated to some degree.
Yeah.
So your hypotheses haven't been proven or disproven. And they haven't been disproven because we typically take a confirmational stance first, mm-hmm. then engage in disconfirmational research. So
yeah, it kind of depends on the mood, right? So like if there's like some sort of like belief that this thing exists in the zeitgeist, then you probably do a disconfirmational. But like typically it is confirmational. Like you want to demonstrate that the thing exists rather than like chop away around it and hope that you find something through like your weed whacking.
Well, I mean, but you know, if energy lines interconnect through our body and like attach to the soles of our feet, like you kind of have to prove that first before mm-hmm. we can start looking for alternative explanations.
Mm-hmm.
And with a lot of like pseudoscience claims and like,
oh yeah, that's their go-to
supernatural claims, right? Like I can't prove that something isn't a ghost if I'm not even going to start with the idea that there is a ghost.
Right.
Like I have to,
you have to have some
it.
Sort of qualification to be a ghost first, and then right. you apply it to the phenomenon that you think might be a ghost.
Right. And I mean, maybe we can get a little closer with that for what people think, and then we can go in and go, oh, it's just magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's,
you just need to fix your
CO2
pipes because they're leaking.
Yeah. Right. And in this case, it's like, of course there's no scientific evidence. No legitimate scientist in their right mind is going to start with the premise that this is real.
Uh-huh.
They're going to start with, well, let's see if we can actually test it. Oh, we can't? Well, I'm not going to try to... That disproves it.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, the lack of evidence disproves your hypothesis.
Yes, exactly.
But...
Well, it doesn't even, like, it doesn't even put your hypothesis on the table, to be honest.
Because it can't
it's be not a hypothesis at this point. Yeah, like, you don't even have a hypothesis. You've got a vibe, bro. I've been listening to a lot of Tara Brapazon lately, and she says vibe a lot, and it's entered my like speech. So it's all vibes here on out. So
that's cool. That's a vibe.
That's a vibe.
I don't know. I might be too old. So,
well, I think she's older than you.
I mean, I don't know, but she's cooler than me.
She's cooler than all of us combined.
It's true.
So. No, like with reflexology, I think I would definitely put it in the pseudoscience, particularly because of its kind of history and development around like the early 1900s, and late 1800s. So like we're still looking at like Victorian, like golden age nonsense with reflexology. Where, let's see, Fitzgerald first introduced it, William H. Fitzgerald, not Victorian, introduced reflexology in the United States in 1913, and he was a ear, nose, and throat specialist. And then it was later modified in the 30s and the 40s by Eunice Ingram, who was a nurse and physiotherapist. And so they have that like sheen of academia, medical practice. They provide legitimacy to this thing through their credentials. And then I believe it was the Ingram, it's called the Ingram method, which shifted the reflexology from like all of the body just down to the feet. And that's kind of where it's taken off since then. On the other hand, I would probably put Reiki in our like astrology with extra steps bucket.
Yeah,
Because like you have to
definitely.
buy into chi first.
Yeah, I always view Reiki. I worked with a guy who was like a trained Reiki, when I worked retail, who was trained in Reiki and like super cool guy, older guy, like wonderful man to work with. But every now and then he'd go on about Reiki. I was just like, I can't get past that barrier of like, but like he was all in and it was harmless as far as I was concerned. Like there wasn't anything. I mean, there's harm if you're thinking like this is going to help you over something else and you're not seeking regular treatment, but
And that seems to be the only thing that, like, who is this? The National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health from Health and Human Services, US Department. Basically, Reiki hasn't shown any harmful effects. It might like misguide people from seeking medical treatment, but also like I'll point it back at them and be like, well, you haven't like made medical treatment accessible to your whole population, so I don't know why you're wagging your finger, but okay.
Right. Would you kind of put like reflexology in that same boat? Like it's not really like kind of in the same thing. Like it's a little more like pseudoscience because it has that
I would
veneer
put
of
it in,
science.
I'd put it in benign pseudoscience. Like, I don't think, I think things like learning styles, Enneagram, other stuff we've talked about, way more harmful than reflexology. If you're just going in and having somebody touch your feet, like, cool.
Wave their hands over you and manipulate your chi.
Yeah, like if that's your stick, like go for it. Like I see that there's a particular person who like this goes into that like Western obsession with Orientalism genre where it's like we want to feel like we're deprived of spirituality and religion and meaning in our lives and like we're caught up in like the post-capitalist like chaos. And so like we look to the East to like center ourselves and become, you know, enlightened, and like this is just kind of like a part of that package. And so like I don't think there's any like if you're not bought into that, then I don't think Reiki or reflexology is gonna like come across your radar whatsoever. Like this is the first time I'm learning about reflexology, but I am realizing after looking at their diagrams of feet, I was like, ooh, I've seen this before, but I had no idea what it was. So and I wouldn't know about Reiki unless I was in like spooky circles of like
Right.
people who have too much money and wear too much turquoise.
Yeah, I mean, and the you know, in kind of a best case scenario with these, like you might get some benefit from a placebo effect. Might boost your confidence a little bit, that might help.
And if Reiki is a part of your spiritual practice, then you could throw that into church stuff. Like and see boosts in like religiosity and spiritual engagement and well-being. I don't know if like people are religiously bought into reflexology.
I don't know. I haven't found anything that like really They do make, at least some of the websites that I found do make some claims.
Ooh, I like claims.
So this is that same website that was like, but there's no evidence disproving it. claims for specific conditions. Detoxification. There are acupressure points for complete detoxification of the body. Include the great rushing point of the webbing between the big and second toes, the three yin crossing on the ankle. This is very like Western people into Oriental medicine. The Shu Mansion just below the collarbone, the Union Valley. These are all like capitalized places on the hand and so on. They can help with asthma, according to them. Better eyesight. Fix your eyes. Hair loss. And there's a lot more, but they also make claims for things like diabetes.
Oh.
And like that starts to move me in a direction where I'm like, okay, like you want to like massage the scalp and
This is just the feet, right?
No, I mean there's some other like points that are tied to like these like acupuncture-esque, because it's like derived out of the idea of acupuncture of like these pressure points, and if you apply pressure in a certain way, there is a lot that focuses on the feet, but there are some other parts that they can help with.
Gotcha. This is like the NoFap woman that I think like had her NASCAR track closed down. Like, this is just like I feel like we're in a time loop from the snake oil salesman. It just keeps like recreating itself over and over and over and over and over again.
I mean, but like you mentioned it earlier, and I think that's the issue that like when we start to get into like the people who are really promoting this like eccentric side in history of chiropractic is that like we're in an environment where it can still be difficult to go and find a doctor. And like there are still issues with medicine, and we're not that far out from like really disturbing things in medicine. Like we still do disturbing things. We still have issues with doctors who treat non-white patients differently and view their tolerance for pain differently. We have doctors who don't take women's pain seriously. And again, and part of that comes from their own like odd beliefs, part of that comes from their training, part of that comes from other things. And there's a level of barbarism in certain aspects and certain ways that we view. I mean, like Patch Adams is a revolutionary like story because his whole concept was bedside manner. And that wasn't that long ago. Where the main thing was is like, no, we're not gonna nice to patients? What are you talking about? I mean, we're 50, 60 years out from like lobotomies in psychology. Like we're like a generation detached from it. In terms of like people who are still alive, like may have survived and are still alive today. We're not that far out from like severe electroshock therapy. Like I get it. I get why people are like, you know what? I don't trust medicine. But
There are plenty of people to profit off of that distrust.
right. And they're really not selling anything better. It sounds better. It seems more humane. It seems more helpful, but it's less, has less efficacy.
Yeah. So, I don't know. All that to say is if you have diabetes and you want to go to a reflexologist, I won't judge you for that, but maybe also go see a general practitioner too. Supplemental. But also, if you don't have health insurance to like do that or you don't have money for insulin, like good on you for trying something, I guess.
Yeah, it's tough. Like understanding like the social systems in which like this stuff rises in, it gets back to like there is a kernel of truth there, about like how the medical system is, or how some doctors are, and maybe looking for alternatives to invasive, costly procedures, even though those costly procedures may be the best way to help you. But the US isn't great when it comes to healthcare. And so it doesn't surprise me when people are looking for anything.
So we got people going to Reiki.
Yeah.
And having the hands laid upon them, and what is allegedly an oriental practice, but sounds like the laying of hands in a charismatic church,
Well, you add chi
just
to
with
it,
less
and
people.
it
It's chi, not the Holy Spirit. Gotcha.
right.
And then we have reflexology, where you like pay someone to touch your feet. Now, that all is kind of like, not ideal. But whatever. Take me on a journey through chiropractic, because I've heard bits and pieces of this as we've been prepping for this episode, and I feel like I'm about to like have to buckle up.
I'm going to try to condense it because we don't have 3 hours.
Oh Lord.
It is a it, and it's a spectrum. There are people engaging in chiropractic who I think are doing fine, normal work. They're, it's kind of like like it kind of maybe borders a little bit of like massage or helps to like loosen some joints and help with a little pain. People do report positive things from going to see a chiropractic, a doctor of chiropractic medicine, as they have to call themselves, not doctor. But there's a lot that's kind of steeped into this. There are a lot of people who use that moniker of doctor of chiropractic medicine, as doctor. They argue that they do more training than a doctor and therefore they're better. They house a lot of spiritual belief into it that starts to border on the difference between, going and dealing with a little like tense back, or like neck because like your posture's bad, to getting into the realm of the anti-vax movement, like at the other extreme end of the spectrum. And that line is blurred. I will link this great like undercover expose of CalJAM. It's the big chiropractic conference, and all the big names in anti-vax go there and they speak. And so like on the front it looks like a psych conference. There's merch booths, there's people selling books and equipment and the newest technology, like we'd have Qualtrics there, they have their version of that there, whatever.
I bet your ass Sage and Macmillan and Elsevier
Probably, because on the front, it's just a normal medical conference.
there too.
But there's a speaker series, and they bring in wonderful guests who are within the chiropractic world, but they also include people like, was it Joe Kennedy, politician and anti-vaxxer. Andrew Wakefield goes regularly, most famous kind of anti-vaxxer, what he did to those poor kids and lost his medical license for it. Little fun fact I learned about him is that his big anti-vax push also included trying to pay kids for their blood at a birthday party.
What?
He was at a birthday party for one of his kids and needed blood for some of the tests that he was running, and so he was gonna like spot him a 20. And this all came out in court. Like I wish I was like speaking like weirdly hyperbolic. Like that and giving autistic kids colonoscopies to like learn that the vaccine is what caused autism in them. And so like he's been adopted by this like wing of chiropractic. And like, again, like it's hard to separate the two because like when you look at its history, it's all intertwined. The people who created this were very anti-modern medicine, which like rightfully so. I love this this like intro to chiropractor from this pro-chiropractic website, this chiropractic website that I found. And it was talking about how, like, you know, these men are what you might describe as eccentric. So these are Andrew Taylor Still, and so he's the father of osteopathy, and D.D. Palmer. And I'm going to show you a picture of D.D. Palmer, or you can look up D.D. Palmer.
I'm looking at it right now.
This
like
man,
like initials D.D. or like
D.D. Palmer, P-A-L-M-E-R. Life goals. In terms of like, this is going to be me in like 20 years.
He looks like Tolstoy.
He's got like Rasputin vibes. But like, yeah, he was eccentric. And this guy's like, yeah, they're eccentric, but they had major issues with the state of mainstream medicine. And mainstream medicine rejected both of them. The guy argues like, well, like, but if you look at mainstream medicine, like, you know, the 19th century medical profession was unbelievably barbaric. Yep. I mean, yeah.
No.
You know, lobotomies, drugs like thalidomide and mercury were utilized in like vaccines. And that's typically where some of the vaccine hesitancy comes from, like the use of mercury and thalidomide, stuff like that. But like modern vaccines don't utilize that or don't utilize it in the like, again, it's like inert or like what they're utilizing and what people are worried about is very different than what they might have been like 100 years ago. You know, other things like, and he'll bring up things like, you know, medical blistering was a commonly accepted practice. Smoking was good for you. Yeah, because the cigarette companies were paying doctors. It wasn't like medical science knew it was bad. It's just that it was being suppressed by capitalism. Which again, maybe is a good argument. Maybe that's something we have in common with chiropractic and like this history is that we're like, well, yeah, maybe we should like remove some of the money and the influence of these like these practices that are more about lining the pockets of insurance companies and medical like the hospitals, not the doctors, where it doesn't pay to do research, but instead like, you know, fund good medical research.
Right. And that also kind of brings in like overprescription of medications too.
Yeah.
Like the opioid crisis. Like, how do you not look at the opioid crisis and then just, and you become skeptical? You know what I mean? Like,
right. I mean, and again, that's not like, that's the medical profession being co-opted by a rich pharmaceutical family who wants to make more money, more and more and more money. So,
and I think there's probably something also to be said about all of the things we've talked about, like sans the green line test too, is that like Western medical practice is like really, really, really good at like locating acute illness and treating it.
Yeah.
But if you ask your general practitioner what you should do to like not get sick, they're like, oh, well, you know, like eat better, like, and I don't know, wear a mask and probably stop smoking.
Right.
Okay, our 15 minutes are up. I have like 73 more people I need to see today.
Right. They're overworked. It's more about quick, it's diagnosis to move on to the next person because we're not talking about like the small town practitioner that needs to help 100 people. Total. We're talking about the one practitioner that needs to help 10,000 people, you know, or several thousand, you know, between a small clinic.
Well, even that small town practitioner is probably the regional practitioner.
Right. Right. So it officially began. And so like, yes. Yeah. Like medical profession is barbaric. That is kind of the kernel of truth to where this comes from. You have some people who are kind of upset with the system. Don't trust doctors, which again, like I can see that. But if the alternative is like this other extreme thing, or let's bring my kids together and give them all measles because they'll develop a herd immunity that way. Doesn't matter
Oh
if they go to if
my
they if they don't if you know it doesn't matter if they go to school and infect the immunocompromised kid, like it's fine.
Did you have a chickenpox party?
No, but I got it on my own.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I
But
didn't
I
have a
know about
party,
those.
like a party, but when I got it, all of my cousins came over. And so
Yeah.
they could pass it and get over it. And so we all had chicken pox together.
And which, from my understanding, like that seems to be an effective thing for chicken pox, but
Not
not
measles
for measles.
or scoliosis.
Right. Or right. Like, I mean, because chicken pox, it's apparently worse when you're older. So like you actually want it young. But yeah,
And you only get
so
it once.
right, yes. It's very different. And like, and the reason, like, it's very harmful to chickens. Like the human pox is what we don't want to get, and we eradicated that with a vaccine. We just call it smallpox. Yeah, because it like that's not the one you want everyone to get. That's why. And really to kind of like step aside a bit, like when we talk about this in terms of like again, that kernel of like coincidence or truth that comes with usually what's tied to the MMR, the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine, when it comes to the anti-vax movement, is because of, aspects of like when autism is diagnosed. Like it kind of lines up, though, arguably speaking, like you probably recognize your kid doesn't smile back at you or doesn't like reciprocate laughter or little things that are like clear that there might be some issues with social, like reading social cues and reciprocating those social cues or like verbal behavior. It's just that it just so happens that about the first is about when like a diagnosis, like a practitioner's diagnosis can happen. It's also really muddied. There's this online reporting system. So like you can go and view it. It's free, it's open source. The government puts this big database together so that people can go and say, like, hey, I got this vaccine, I had this negative response to it. The important thing to know about that too, if you want to use that as an argument of why vaccines are bad, is that there is no monitoring on that. You can
Oh,
literally
it's
go and
just reports.
it's just reports. So people will read it and take it at face value because like, but what ends up happening is that someone who's, like 80 years old and is having constant health problems gets the COVID vaccine, dies because they're 80 years old and they have constant health problems. And then they go, they got the COVID vaccine a month ago or a year ago. And there are people who go and report like years later, well, this person got the MMR vaccine when they were young. They died of a heart attack. And they're like, oh, that's terrible at 40 or 50 or 60. So it's the ability to go and like investigate every one of those cases is just beyond the scope of where the CDC or any group like that is. And a lot of these are like that where you have these weird discrepancies when it comes. So like those are the two big things that are typically thrown around. There's a lot more. Like we could talk about I could talk about the anti-vax movement and some of that. But like it does tie into that kernel of truth of like issues with the medical system, problems with medical, like looking for medical help or looking for alternatives. And this person says, hey, I can fix your problem. Like maybe you come to see me as a chiropractor and like I help you with like an issue with your shoulder or your back. And great. But it's when it starts to become like, but we can also do this to cure other things. Or all you need is chiropractic, or like bring your infant in and we'll adjust their spine. Like again, there's a spectrum. I'm not saying that everyone's doing this, but there are people, there are prominent people in the chiropractic community, these prominent voices, that especially like prominent anti-vax voices that are like adjusting kids. And it's like, that's dangerous. And like the way that they're doing it and the tools and like the severity, it's not like that level of like massage and adjustment. It's like severe. They're popping popping bones.
They're popping babies.
They're popping babies. That's got to be the name of the episode. They're popping babies. But like the problem that we see with this is that like people, like if it's not done properly, if there is no control, if someone is like pushing the severity in which they're adjusting someone who may not need adjustment, people end up paralyzed. Like there are, you know, severe cases with this. So like with any medical treatment, like you have to be cautious with some of it. And there is a difference between like the amount of testing that goes through something like a new vaccine, like even something like an RNA vaccine that seemed to be very new but had like 40 years of development. They just so happened to roll it out as part of, you know, for COVID. It was the next step of what we were going to see. But yeah. So let me tell you the history and maybe I'll lighten the mood a little bit.
It's kind of dark right now.
It is. So it began in 1895. Its founder was Daniel David Palmer, D.D. Palmer. He, quote unquote, adjusted the spine of a deaf janitor.
And the deaf could hear.
Yes. And he's claimed Jesus to have restored his hearing. It was not an unknown truth. According to this guy, you know, this is a pro chiropractic thing. You know, spinal manipulation was not an unknown treatment. Palmer never claimed to be the first. They actually do claim that this has been around for even longer. It has long history and medical practice.
From ancient Egypt.
The Greeks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. Like, that's kind of also a hallmark we're seeing in the series, is that they always, like, throw back to some ancient civilization.
Which there does seem to be evidence that, like, Hippocrates, like, walked on people's backs and, like, did, like, thing to help, like, adjust stuff. Which, like, yeah, your back hurts, you get someone to walk on your back, everything's good. That is a little different.
That, yeah, no, like, you can't claim a historical lineage if the two things you're doing are completely different.
Yeah. So
that's like
let me
saying,
give you a little background into to D.D. Palmer, who is like one of my new favorite figures. Like, again, like I want his aesthetic when I'm older. Should like grow my beard out a little more. He spent years as a practitioner of magnetic healing in Davenport, Iowa. He was really into magnetism. He treated
something about those Midwesterners.
He quote unquote treated ailments by manipulating the magnetic field surrounding patients' bodies. So maybe a little early Reiki.
Uh-huh.
In 1895, the building where Palmer worked, a janitor mentioned, this is that janitor mentioned to Palmer that while lifting a heavy object, he strained his back and heard a distinctive pop. He had been deaf ever since. On examination, Palmer noted a vertebra that appeared to be out of alignment. He thrust on the vertebra, reportedly immediately improving the janitor's hearing. Which, like, to me, like, I don't know enough about, like, medical science to know that, like, maybe, like, a nerve was pinched or there was some disruption. But, like, in his back, like, I'm thinking of, like, the auditory system. Doesn't quite...
It doesn't go below your neck.
Right. Palmer began to reason that when a vertebra was out of alignment, it caused compression on the nerves. He developed a philosophy based on the idea that altering nerve impulses affected organ and tissue function, leading to disease. This became known as his law of the nerve. Again, not a scientific law, not even a theory.
Not even a hypothesis.
Right. But, I mean, this gets us to the point of, like, again, like, there's this spiritual nature to some of the stuff that they're doing. Him, not as much as, like, I think A.T. Still is a little more. No, Palmer was the spiritualist.
This is definitely giving me polygraph vibes.
Yeah, that we can, like, learn stuff. And again, like, there's the difference between, like, a disruptive nerve making, like, giving you, like a tremor or having issues with, like, you know, again, like there's something wrong with your back, like you can feel pain and it might extend to other parts of your body. But like there's a jump between that and like, this is what gives you the flu. And like chiropractic can also heal, you know, a loss of hearing or psychological distress. And like, that's kind of all these other doctors are quacks. We're the real specialists.
Not that I would want to go see a Victorian doctor by any means, but I definitely would not want D.D. Palmer to like put force on one of my vertebrae. Just let's see what this does. Like, that's how you become a paraplegic.
Yeah. And so the other of these two is A.T. Still, Andrew Taylor Still. He was an apprentice physician in Kirksville, Missouri. He was concerned about this profession that he was going into. It says he found the field uninspiring and was well aware of just how frequently ineffective and sometimes downright harmful modern medicine practice was. Again, we're talking like late 1800s, early 1900s. After losing three of his children to a bout of spinal meningitis, he became totally disillusioned with mainstream medicine. In 1874, he began using spinal manipulation to treat patients in clinical practice as the, quote, lightning bone setter, combining his new theories on biomechanics with some pretty out there ideas on magnetic and spiritual healing. It was a drugless, non-surgical approach to the treatment of disease, and it rapidly gained acceptance amongst, like, the general public. And by 1892, he had established the American Osteopathic College. Medicine's not good enough. Through spiritual healing and the setting of the spine, we can cure disease, including like spinal meningitis. Yeah.
Tragic.
Yeah. Oh, so that's where osteopathy comes from. That's like bone or osteopathic. Like, it is this kind of offshoot. But it kind of sounds to me, I don't know if you know anything about Rand Paul, the politician. So he's a doctor. He's like an optometrist, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I think that's familiar. I know his dad's Ron.
Yes. Well, him and like this like circle of optometrists like didn't like how the current optometrist board was doing things, so they created their own. And so he is licensed, but like through his own. And that's what it sounds like to me. It's like, I don't like this medicine. I'm going to create my own college of medicine.
Right.
So where do you think, like from what I've told you about D.D. Palmer, he's very eccentric, bit of a spiritualist, really into magnetism. Where did he get the idea for chiropractic from? If you just had to guess based on what you know and like how we like the topics that we've covered before, where did he get the idea from chiropractic from?
Like, in terms of like what philosophical like orientation was he in that like led to this application, or like he was out on a stroll to the grocery store, noticed something
happened, and in that experience he got the idea. He engaged in something, and he got the idea. It's not sex.
Opium.
That would probably be more believable.
Was he at the Kellogg Institute?
No, that would be really cool too.
He's in the area.
No. So he had communicated with this guy named Jim Atkinson during a seance.
Ah.
Jim Atkinson died 50 years ago. He was a doctor. And in this seance, the idea for chiropractic came to him from the other world.
Okay. That fully tracks.
Yeah. According to him, 95% of all disease is due to subluxations. In chiropractic, these occur when one or more of the bones of the spine move out of position and create pressure on spinal nerves, causing all sorts of disease by interfering with the flow of nerve impulses between the brain and the body. And if you can take care of these subluxations, you can cure 95% of all disease.
Love.
But like, that's what Jim Atkinson helped them figure out.
The ghost of Jim Atkinson.
The ghost of Jim Atkinson. Yeah, he considered it by in 1911, he considered it almost like a kind of religion. He said it, quote, must have religious, it must have a religious head, one who is the founder, as did Christ, Muhammad, and others who have founded religions. I, D.D. Palmer, am the fountainhead.
Right on.
The local paper referred to him as a quack who claimed, quote, he can cure the sick and crippled with his magnetic hands. So like they weren't really all in even then, and like that just like furthered this like need, and where Still created the American Osteopathic College in 1897. He created the Palmer School of Chiropractic in Davenport. And again, there's no evidence to support subluxation theory or whatever they want to call it. I wouldn't call it a theory, or the use of spinal manipulation for anything other than uncomplicated neck or back pain. So there does seem to be some evidence of like proper adjustment of the spine and the neck and like some of the joints to help with uncomplicated pain. But it's not going to like cure your cancer. And that has
Right,
led to
yeah.
like, I would argue it has led to kind of like two fields in chiropractic. It's the people who are like, we know there are limitations. We're just here to like some massage and chiropractic and help some people like with their like aches and pains, sitting in an office chair all day. Come and see me at the local chiropractic. Like I'm here to help. And like, I don't have any problem with that. I think that's fine. And then there's the other side who are like, we know Palmer was weird, but like, we kind of agree with everything.
It just gets reimagined and
Right.
reinterpreted for new ages. Yeah,
Yeah.
no, that's why I was kind of surprised when we were planning this season when it came to chiropractic, because I didn't know about that other side at all.
Yeah.
Because everyone that I know that goes to chiropractic, or chiropractors that I do know, are definitely in the like, hey, you're like recovering from that car wreck. Like,
Right.
let's get you popped like every other week or whatever.
And it's hard to tell where that line is blurred when like some of the major conventions are promoting that kind of, and again, it's been rebranded into this like anti-establishment, like Palmer himself, and these are like where some of the issues arise. Like Palmer himself referred to himself as a doctor. He was arrested and convicted of practicing medicine without a license. He went to jail. So let this note I had to keep. Legend has it that he married at least five times. He died in 1913 at the age of 68. His official cause of death was typhoid fever.
Couldn't
So
pop that out of him, could you?
yeah, that's actually the last law line of the article. Apparently, there was no miraculous adjustment for typhoid. It's like a little dig, but yeah, like it's got this history steeped in kind of like quasi, not quasi, like full-blown mysticism. And I think that's kind of like that blur between like the Still side where it's like we can adjust some bones and like there's some medical training there, so there's this like pseudoscience aspect that gets like built out of this like hatred for medical establishment and issues, legitimate issues with the medical profession in the 1900 early 1900s, compared
And today,
to
to some extent.
yeah, I mean still, and then D.D. Palmer, who's like way out there, like
The
full on
Rasputin
mysticism.
of the joint
Yeah.
popping Rasputin.
Yeah, and so like they like new things like a lot of money, and this is I'll put this AP News article on antivirus chiropractors, the rising force of misinformation, that kind of talks about this sort of vocal minority within the pseudo medical community, that builds the money that's being pumped into this, the figures that are like the anti-mask, the anti-vax, the anti like everything, and it plays into what you see behind the scenes at even like supposedly reputable places like CalJAM, these chiropractic conventions. Yeah, I'm trying to find this guy in particular. They have touted their supplements as alternatives to, because they're also now pushing like supplements and other stuff. Like it's kind of like it's in that whole thing. Like we're going to talk about like the supplement industry, I think next episode maybe. And it's like tied to that as well, that like it's again looking for like any alternative. And it makes sense if you're looking for help, if you're looking for, you know, especially if you've got something that maybe we don't have an answer for with modern medicine, or it's very experimental, so it may not work. And so you're looking for that hope. Someone comes along and says, I've got the cure. It says they've touted their supplements as alternative to vaccines, written doctor's notes to allow patients to get out of masks and immunization mandates, donated large sums of money to anti-vaccine organizations, and sold anti-vax ads on Facebook and Instagram. The AP discovered one chiropractor gave thousands of dollars to a super PAC that hosted an anti-vax vaccine pro-Trump rally near the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. And like, I like this, just like there are these connections. And again, like this is one chiropractor, but like there's enough of them that they're doing speaker series, and they're all kind of inviting each other to each person's speaker series. And so it's this like big loop of like named famous people within the organization that promote chiropractic. And so I think like what we're kind of seeing through this, and why like this is probably one of the more dangerous pseudoscience approaches, because you do have that group who are like, look, I'm just learning to help people, like sitting down all day, you got the car accident, whatever, like I'm just here to help with some like massage and adjustment and things like that, versus this other side. And this other side's also recruiting and saying like,
And
hey,
fundraising.
you want to be like us, we can help you like also spread this good word, but you have to go come to like our chiropractic school,
And donate to our super PAC.
and donate to our super PAC, and come to our speaker series, and listen to, all the other
So
stuff.
definitely worse than learning styles and polygraph, but definitely in the same tier.
And it is like quasi-legitimized. I mean, like it is legitimized to an extent, because you can put doctor on your name. Now you have to say doctor of chiropractic medicine, like kind of legally. There are certain states that have like restrictions and laws about like who can and cannot call themselves a medical doctor. Like you don't put MD at the end. We're seeing this too with some of the like the doctors of nurse practitioner. There's this little subset of them that are kind of also in the same camp, that like call themselves a doctor on TikTok or Instagram, and they're kind of peddling pseudoscience nonsense, that's putting people in danger. So
Yeah, no, the chiropractic is definitely normalized and culturally cemented in our society. There's no way we're getting rid of it.
No, much in the same way that if you have a dangerous, I mean, in the same way, I would argue you could find a doctor. There's got to be a doctor out there who's got a YouTube channel where they're spouting. There are a couple of ex-doctors that do, that have enough followers that make me kind of concerned. But there are people who, I mean, statistically speaking, you could find them.
Oh, yeah.
But we're talking about like us, you know, like, but those doctors aren't running their own conventions. Like there's a little bit of a difference. They're usually being like having their medical license revoked for malpractice. So, yeah.
Well, what a horrifying world we live in.
Thank you for letting me take you down that rabbit hole.
Thank you. I feel worse now.
On the bright side, like D.D. Palmer would probably be an interesting guy to talk to.
Yeah, no, he seems cool.
But like
But like that's the thing, like I'm thinking like D.D. Palmer goes into the Victorian bucket. Like they're all crazy by our own standards. So like I don't blame them for coming up with stuff as best as they could at the time. I don't put that as a like obviously like I mean, I don't know. Compared to the Urantia people,
I mean,
like D.D. Palmer's pretty tame.
Yeah. So magnetic healing versus Kellogg's is it's about there.
It's just some weird Victorian. This is my new conspiracy. It's Midwesterners.
Oh, it's
Midwestern
just
Victorians.
yeah, it's Iowa and where was Palmer was in Davenport. Where
And
was
then Kellogg
Stills?
was in Battle Creek, Michigan.
And Still was in Missouri.
So, methinks there's something up with the Midwesterners.
Maybe it's just like all the like open land.
Maybe it's the corn.
The corn. Maybe
Something
it's the
about
corn.
living
It's all the
above
corn.
and.
It all comes back to that. That's going to be our that's what we're going to end our season on is like it was it's the corn. Like
It's the
that's
corn.
we'll embrace that as our conspiracy theory.
Something about living north and west of that Mason-Dixon. Not good.
It's all it's all tied to high fructose corn syrup too, Thomas.
Well, that's where screamo music came from. Up in that area. It was whiny Midwestern suburban kids.
This is just gonna like further the internet's hatred for like Ohio.
Yeah. Which seems ill-placed right now because of East Palestine, but
Yeah. I'm sure they'll find
never
an adjacent
forget.
state. Yeah. So I don't know. Do you have a ask psychology question for us so that we can kind of get to the end of this or
It's your turn.
it is my turn? I thought I got it last time.
No, I got it last time. I thought I did. I don't remember.
Whatever, let's just go. We're doing it live.
It
Ask psychology. Newest question. Social services burnout. That's an ad. Oh, perfect. 11 hours ago.
Okay.
Is there a term for people who are so attached to their trauma it becomes part of their identity? I've begun to think about it like emotional Stockholm syndrome, except their warden is their trauma. So they will do absolutely anything to keep it. People who are whole, who are attempting to be, are threats to their emotional state because it shows that you don't have to keep the trauma to be a person. If they accept that person, then it throws their own self-imposed identity into question.
So, this is a topic that's a little spicy that I wasn't going to introduce to our pseudoscience discussion, but I'm going to go ahead and throw trauma studies as legitimate inquiry for pseudoscience. Because there's a very big difference between the concept of trauma in the research, therapeutic, clinical practice, and the way that it's used in the rest of the culture, and as it spills into trauma-informed education and trauma-informed business practices and trauma-informed community building and trauma-informed X, Y, and Z, where people are making too much money doing very minimal work. So trauma is the dysregulation of your nervous system and your amygdala in particular. That causes minor things in your life to elicit a fight, flight, or freeze response. The idea that one is hooked on trauma or identifies with trauma is you can't, obviously, this is an ephemeral thing, but what they're pointing to is the event that in which caused the dysregulation, not the actual trauma, but the cause of the trauma, if that makes sense. And so a lot of trauma language and trauma identity and trauma work goes into this very Freudian area of let's unpack what happened to you in Iraq, which can be helpful in coming to terms with your the dysregulation of that comes that is trauma, but there's this hyper focus on the thing that happened to you that was bad. And then that is what's being identified with, not trauma. You can't, trauma is a physio neuro state of being. It's not like a diagnosis or like a thing, a corporal thing that you have to identify with. So that's my first gripe. And really, right, like,
question.
I know you're on my. So most of the conceptualization and framing around trauma is just nonsense. And then on top of that, you have people identifying with it. So it becomes kind of like what we talked about, where you have people identifying with diagnoses like PTSD, but then like they don't meet the symptomology of PTSD, or they have a different symptomology than PTSD, but they still pick the label. And then you get into this like nightmare scenario where like symptoms cross and emerge. So I don't have a word for it beyond like it being culturally enabled in sharing circles. Like, this isn't the case typically anymore for like LGBT like student groups, because like Gen Zers are over it, but like those millennial pride student groups were awful to be a part of, because it was just group therapy where people were like identifying with their coming out story, or when their parents kicked them out, or when somebody got yelled at on the street. And I'm like, that's awful that that happened to you. This is not group therapy. And it becomes like cultural capital between people, like who has the worst story. So
I could see this question being kind of overlapped with some of like the discussion of like self-diagnosis on social media, where mm-hmm. it gets you clicks. So you almost like have to continue like and engage with that as an aspect of personality, or an aspect of your persona online. Or again, like there are these things that might not be clinical, but may have some association, and you're looking for an answer. And so you find this and you almost co-opt it.
Mm-hmm. There's also, now I'm thinking about it, there is like a CBT term for like a cognitive dysfunction or whatever that they try to fix in CBT, which is masochistic epistemology, where you center your identity around hurting yourself. And so constantly reliving your trauma by choice and identifying with it because it hurts, and because whatever hurts is real. And so you use that to like have a anchor onto reality and center the self around.
So someone did bring up in here this social model of identity change. They said it's not limited to trauma. It posits that many forms of environmental influence can cause identities to shift. Trauma and identity are highly linked, so that what you're describing is actually more likely to happen when someone who is more traumatized by an event. And so because it's just like, well, this happened to me, this is part of who I am. And that can be difficult to shake and to like remove as that aspect, to detach from yourself in, you know, maybe without like some intensive therapy.
I will say, like, the trauma event, like, I agree with this person completely, is like not something that you're going to forget.
Yeah.
And that's something that you do have to come to terms with as a person. But like, I feel like this also, like, on the extreme, on this side, there's like a legitimate explanation for like incorporating trauma into your life story. But then, like, when you list all of your like identities, if you put traumatized on there, then I'm like, okay, what's up with that? Like, now you're integrating it into yourself, not just your story.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my like, what's up with this? But my vibe is that it's a masochistic epistemology where people are unsure about what's real and what's not real, and so they decide that things that hurt are real, and so they need to relive trauma in order to verify that they are a legitimate human being.
Oof.
And then pair that with the self-diagnosis culture and identity collection culture of the internet, and so you need to be seen by others, so you have the identity, but then you also need to relive the trauma, so that way you maintain a legitimate self-concept, and it's built on hurt.
in my attempt to lighten the mood, I was going to say something like, well, I tried to bring us into a better spot. I was like, you know, like we're really down at the end of that talk about like chiropractic anti-vax pipeline. Like, let's move into this question. Uh-oh. Well, it was the newest question.
And what, I mean, that's so, just the theme. Like, we thought our theme was pseudoscience. The theme is life is suffering.
Yeah. Which leads people to pseudo, oh, that's our next paper, right? Like, we can talk about this, like, can we, like, we can, like, frame it in Jungian.
It's the witch's house.
The witch's house. Yeah.
The candy house in the woods. You didn't have your needs met at home. You were abandoned by the system.
And the witch
go to the witch's house for healing.
And she ultimately harms you.
Yep.
Or you have to, like, hurt her in response. So there's pain regardless. Mm-hmm. Well.
Huzzah!
On that light note. Yeah, well. I don't know if it's going to go uphill. It's not really going to go uphill from here. Though we might bump a little bit up talking about, like, I don't know, Walmart vitamins.
It's not going to get better till the end, guys.
Yep. So that's how Buckle pseudoscience up. Vibes.
Whoop, whoop. Talk at y'all later.
Yeah. And on that note, bye, everybody.